back to Legally Judgy. I'm Nicole.
And I'm Alexa.
Hello.
What's up, girl?
Welcome back, my
Buenos
friend.
Buenos dias.
Bonjour. Croissant.
Je ne sais quoi. Those okay. are just things that I heard in Mary-Kate and Ashley movies, I feel.
What Mary-Kate and Ashley movie were they saying je ne sais quoi?
Girl, I don't know. It was probably on, do you remember that? Oh no, you didn't watch TV as a kid, huh? You were doing work.
I was hoping you were going to say like Parent Trap. I was like, I've seen that.
It was like random commercials growing up where they would try to pitch you learning languages, and it was like the same phrase over and over in these commercials.
I remember like that cartoon who did like the Constitution song.
Oh yeah, I remember that guy. I hated him.
You know what I'm talking about? So annoying. What was that called? Wow, throwback. We're old as fuck.
I don't remember that guy. Do you remember the 50 nifty United States
of the 13 original colonies?
Oh, she's dancing, people. Oh, she's shimmying now. Jesus. That's not good. And then conjunction, junction.
That's what I was talking about. That was the same people who did the Constitution song.
Oh, okay.
Producer Mark's looking at us like, what was that cartoon called? I gotta Google this. Conjunction.
What's your fucking
junction?
Number one iTunes top 10 singles.
Schoolhouse Rock.
Schoolhouse Rock.
They did the Constitution song.
Schoolhouse Rock. Wow. Lame.
Wow. Not good. And they had the I'm Just a Bill.
Oh, yeah.
That was a sad one. That felt a little depressing.
That's not good, huh?
Any indicator of today's legislation, then yes. Very depressing.
True.
Okay, so anyways, we just got very sidetracked very quickly.
What are we at? What are we doing?
So let's do our billboard.
Bulletin board. You've been calling it a billboard lately. I'm just look, girl. I see where you're going.
Working
with
a bit too much, if you catch my drift.
I'm all for putting up billboards.
So all I think about is billboards.
Billboards in the 50 nifty United States is what we need to do
of our faces.
So y'all need to sign up for our Patreon so we can afford said billboards.
Well, you buried the lead. Well, you didn't bury the lead. You actually did the opposite of burying the lead.
I saved the fucking lead.
Put the lead right out in front. Long story short, we have a Patreon. If you have not heard. And on said Patreon, we have uncut episodes where you get to hear all of the legal content, plus a little bit about us, plus a little bit more about us, plus some like very random moral questions that we ask each other.
Did you mention our Patreon and talking about us, though?
No. Patreon.
Okay.
So then on said Patreon, we have a community hub as well that has behind the scenes footage, polls, and more. And then we've got some mini-sodes where we talk about like degenerate legal content is what I'll call it. Because it's often...
That's a good way to say
it. It's a little sketchy, you know?
It's off-color legal issues. Like, you don't want to know, but you really
but
do,
do
want to know.
Yeah.
And that's why we put it up on the billboards that we can't yet afford because we don't have enough patrons. So maybe for your birthday, I'll get you a billboard.
Oh, my God. I would love that.
Would you prefer it say, Happy Birthday, Nicole, XOXO, Gossip Girl? Or would you prefer Legally Judgy?
Legally Judgy, for sure.
Yeah.
I don't care about my
but
birthday.
But then in the corner, I'll say happy birthday.
That's fine. You could do like a little asterisk, like disclaimer. Okay. You know what I mean? Like a legal disclaimer.
That what? What's the disclaimer?
That it's my birthday.
That's true. It's a legal disclaimer that it's your birthday.
Yeah.
People, there's not a lot of hope for this episode. We're just going to come out with it now.
Okay. So that's our billboard. We have Patreon. Please go join our Patreon. Oh, shit. I did it again. What's it called again?
Bulletin board. It's your church bulletin board. It's your church bulletin board.
I'm sorry, guys.
It's been a long week.
Work is hard.
Which means join our Patreon because we're about to talk about why the work week was so fucking
Please
hard.
Join our Patreon. But I also have to remind the peoples on our bulletin board that it is our last episode of the month. So we are off the week after this episode comes out. But, of course, we've got... lots of content that you can catch up on. And if you're not on our Patreon, we are always giving our patrons additional contents because they pay and they love us. Okay. And then final reminder on said bulletin board is that we are going on summer break, as we said last week. So the last half of June and the first half of July, we will be off because we need to like lay on beaches and see our spouses. True. And
we need to hang out with not me and you.
I mean, we actually don't even really hang out that much anymore. That's what's sad.
We talk a lot, though.
We used to. Well, not this week.
Oh, my God.
We were barely friends, twins.
Oh, my God.
Jinx, you owe me a soda.
So we still have it, though. We still have it. I did text you this week. I was like, did we divorce? Yeah. Not dramatic at all.
We were really busy with work. But so long story short, we are going on summer break again, last half of June, first half of July. But again... if you really love us, you'll sign up for Patreon because we will keep pumping the contents there.
Yep.
Summer break aside, we are some hardworking bitches.
With a Z.
Bitch.
All right, time to go into our patron-only content. Yeah. Bye. All right. That was a disturbing...
Scary.
Scary. I'm scared right now. I'm scared of what you just said. So if you want to find out...
today's topic is light.
Yeah. Nice delivery. You're getting into the dark humor now. Yeah. I appreciate it. Yeah, if you want to know what was so terrifying, go sign up for our Patreon. Patreon, Patreon, Patreon. Anyway, we do have a very not light topic today, actually. It's very sad. We're going to be talking about Mac Miller, his rise and ultimate unfortunate demise, and the implications of the drug dealers who supplied him ultimately with the fentanyl-laced pills that ended in his death. So, trigger warning, we're going to be talking about overdose. We're going to be talking about death.
Substance abuse issues.
Yeah. So, this is going to be, you know, we want to honor him in as much as we can. We're going to talk about his life and the things that he was able to accomplish in his 26 years short. But it's a bit heavy. So, bear with us here, people.
Yeah.
As usual, my friend, do you want to open us up?
Let me do it. So, Mac Miller was born in January 1992 as Malcolm James McCormick in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He was a self-taught musician who played the guitar, drums, piano, and bass by the time he turned six. So, obviously very impressive.
Very well accomplished.
That's not true. I actually took a little piano lessons, but...
What? That young?
Yeah.
You started young?
Oh. I started very young in my family. But that's it, just a little piano. But he started rapping at the age of 14, and reportedly he wanted to be a singer before this, but then kind of decided to focus on rap once he got to high school. And his original rap name was Easy Mac, and he said that his early influences were Big L, Lauryn Hill, Beastie Boys, Outkast, and A Tribe Called Quest, so legends.
Pretty good, pretty good.
Lauryn Hill is like one of my favorites, especially post Sister Act 2.
Yeah.
So, you know, when she sings his eyes on the sparrow, killed it.
There you go.
And so he ends up releasing his first mixtape in 2007 when he's 15, and then releases two more within the next 2 years.
Crazy.
And so Mac ultimately gets signed to the independent label Rostrum Records in July 2010, where he releases another mixtape. And his initial style of music was kind of characterized as frat rap, in quotes. and so it's lyrics that are supposed to like focus on partying, smoking weed, wanting fame, money, and women, etc. But I think it's worth noting that he also rapped about his real life and didn't try to pretend like he was from the hood. So he talked about like Kool-Aid and frozen pizzas and Nike sneakers that he wore. And I think things that were, you know, actually a part of his life. You know what I mean?
Yep. Makes sense.
And so he was also like quite expressive. So I think people kind of unfairly labeled him in some ways. I was listening to his music as we prepared for this. So.
Oh my God. So was I today.
A flashback.
I never listened. Did you ever listen to his music before?
Oh yeah. One of my favorite plane albums. Like when I get on the plane, I have certain albums.
Okay.
I have certain albums I play when I get on the plane, and one of them is his.
Really?
Yeah.
You're Mac Miller fan.
So good. So good. I really enjoy it.
Wow.
It's a really good one. I think it's called Circles.
I can't tell. Would I have thought you would be a Mac Miller fan? I don't know.
I mean, in fairness, as I'm sure will not surprise you, this started from my husband because he's very plugged into the music. So yeah, it's called Circles.
Is that one of his mixtapes?
It's a song. A proper album.
Proper album.
Not a mixtape. It was released under, I think it's while he was at Warner, I guess.
Oh, legit. Very legit. I mean, mixtapes are cool too.
Yeah.
I shouldn't give into the man.
Don't give into the
capitalism.
Hype.
Yeah.
Ew.
What am I doing? But go on.
Okay. Well, some big moments kind of come in 2011 when he's featured in XXL's annual freshman class list along with Kendrick Lamar and Meek Mill.
Kendrick.
Massive. If you get featured with Kendrick and Meek, like, you're doing some big things. So after this, Mac ends up dropping another mixtape that included the song Donald Trump, which became his first song to chart the Billboard Hot 100 and peaked at number 75.
By the way, do you know Donald Trump was mad at him for that?
I'm not surprised.
Well, initially he was happy because I guess his line was like, I'm as successful or make as much money. Yeah, something positive. The line was positive about Donald Trump. And then I read that Mac instantly regretted using Donald Trump once Donald actually ran for president. And he was that wasn't personal to Donald. I could have said Bill Gates. And then once he said that in an interview, Donald Trump started tweeting him. And
naturally
calling him a dog and attacking him because he said that he wasn't a big fan. But before that, Donald was like, fully Mac loves me.
I'm sure he was like pumping that at all of his like campaign events.
I know this was not rehearsed or scripted, but a little fun fact I read. I thought that was fun. Fact. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Well, so Donald Trump aside, Mac drops his first studio album, Blue Slide Park, in 2011, which debuts on the Billboard 200 list, which is a big deal because at that point, he was just an independent artist at the time, and the last time an album for an independent label made it into the top 200 was in 1995.
That is pretty big.
So that's a long, that's a big age time gap,
Age gap, yeah, whatever. Whatever you want to say, girl, a lot of time had passed.
So unfortunately for Mac, while he was on tour that same year, he and his friends get arrested in New York for possession of marijuana and spent the night in jail. And so allegedly he was partying in his room with weed and alcohol. Bum, bum, bum. And he said that as he was leaving to go back to his own room, the cops were basically outside of the door and immediately arrested him. And so when the cops kind of went into the room, they found that there were some big jars of weed and open bottles of alcohol around. I imagine there must have been some minors if they were concerned about alcohol. Yeah. Otherwise, it would be like, who gives a shit?
I guess how old was he at this time? He's born in 92.
Ooh, quick math. 20.
I can't do it. Oh, maybe that's why.
I think he's 20, yeah. And so Mac also had about $10,000 of cash in his pocket, which... I love for him, and that's I would cool. like that for me.
I'd love to have that. Yeah. No problem.
He had about $10,000 of cash in his pocket, and the police saw this and assumed that he was a drug dealer. And he tried to explain that he was actually a rapper and somehow got them to look him up on YouTube. And so they verified that,
cops
like,
are just watching Mac Miller on
he's
YouTube.
Actually a rapper. Can you imagine, like, you're sitting in your cell and the cops are watching your YouTube videos YouTube-ing right outside of your cell?
They're fucking, like, singing along.
Yeah, so he said that they sat in the holding cell for one night, and at one point a fan even, like, came in and recognized him.
Right.
Which is, I guess, kind of cool if you're in jail.
I mean, look, you make the best of your circumstance. Yeah. That's what he did.
What did you try to do? But otherwise, it sounded pretty uneventful with, no, actually, eventful. Yeah. Because he told me.
Wow, girl, you were on the line.
I read this article. Like, he did this interview about Nicki the night Nick? That he got arrested. Sorry. He read this interview about the night that he got arrested, so I feel, like, very...
I read that too. Don't
I feel
worry.
Very like we in touch did. With his you know situation that night.
It's very personal.
But he said there were like new people coming in and out as well as some jailhouse drama. So you know, what a time to be alive in upstate New York.
I see why you said me because he came off even though I've seen a couple videos, but he did come off even in reading what he said charismatic. It's like how do you not
very personable?
Yeah, how do you not like this guy? Yeah. He was talking about how at first he was like, man, this sucks, but, you know, I'm with my buddies. It is what it is. And then he had the fan. And then he said later into the later morning, then I think he said something like real crackhead started coming up. His words, not mine. And then he was like, then it kind of got scary because it was like, oh, no, these are people who really are in here. And then those people that were with him, I think they saw the cops watch his YouTube video or something. They found out who he was. And they were like, man, you're a rapper? That's cool. And he was like, yeah. So Mac ended up trying to become friends with them. And he was like, when you get out, hit me up on Twitter. And then he said these guys were
they
in jail.
They sent him DMs.
Yes, some of them. And then some guys said they'd been in jail so long, they don't even know what Twitter is.
That's sad.
So he was like, yeah, and that wasn't cool, man. Yeah. And then, he left. Mac did. And I don't know if they ever reunited. But it was like his storytelling, right? He was like, whoa, this was a crazy experience. Because... Yeah. His other comment was he's had weed, he's been drinking in other cities, but he was in upstate New York,
yep.
A little more conservative. Yeah,
just
pretty conservative, just a little bit. He's like, no other city would have thrown me in jail for this.
No, so like, shit.
Also, even when I hear the word marijuana, I'm like, it sounds so like
old timer.
Yeah,
yeah.
Are you smoking Mary that Jane? Mary Jane? Yep. Yeah, you knew where I was going with it.
Well, so the next day he ends up getting brought in for sentencing, and he. Pays his group's bail since he had $10,000 of cash on him.
Very convenient.
And then later settles the case, though it's unclear what the terms were because, as we've said a million times, settlements are often confidential. So,
TBD. But it couldn't have been.
He
that
paid
much.
Some monies and yeah. He's out.
I mean, ultimately, it's the hotels that call on his group. And I think he later said, too, that he had to learn not to party so hard in the hotels because, or be like concierge, call us first if we're being too loud before you call the cops.
Yeah.
So, let's hope he learned from that.
Yeah.
His next mixtape, Macadelic, comes out in 2012 and debuts on the Billboard Hot 100 list. So 2012 was an interesting year for him. He had one big high. I mean, multiple, but the biggest high, he produced two songs for Pharrell.
Love Pharrell.
Who I know. Oh, I was waiting for that. I was like, I know you,
you
love
know
him.
You know that I love Pharrell.
I mean, are you asking me like, or are you telling
obsessed.
Me?
Obsessed.
Yeah. Okay.
Obsessed.
Like number one celeb crush?
He's definitely up there.
He's a really giddy up there. Smile on your actually,
because right he's just like, he's musically so intelligent. He's got great style. I think he's just like an intelligent human being.
Uh-huh.
One of my favorite things I've ever seen of him, this is very sidetracked, was in the Genius.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
I just learned what ASAP meant.
Genius? After I don't
the
know.
ASAP Rocky episode.
The Kanye docuseries uh-huh. on Netflix Pharrell is in the studio and Kanye's like, listen to my song Through the Wire. Mm-hmm. And you can see Pharrell like slowly digesting all of the things that Kanye is saying. He like leaves the room and he's like, this is the craziest thing I've ever fucking heard.
And I was like, and yeah, that was the moment you
that
heard
was it. I was like, yep.
That's mm-hmm. it for me. That's
yep.
all I need.
Yep. I also love his podcast. Listen to our podcast first and later his.
Then
but,
for, yeah. Do you think know. He'll come on ours? Because you have this love affair.
I would love that.
You would love that. I would love that for you. I would love that for me, to
yeah,
be honest.
Yeah.
Okay. So
sorry, go ahead.
2012, great in the sense that Mac, our boy, was able to produce two songs for Pharrell. Not so great because he gets sued. In July of that same year, 2012, he, Rostrum Records, his record label, and DatPiff, which is a music distribution
just
platform.
Love DatPiff. Throwback.
Yeah, TBT.
Download music there. TBT. Illegally download music there all the time.
Don't say that, girl. They're going to
come
on.
It's over now.
It's fine. R.I.P.
Also, you can pay my student loans because I don't have any money for you.
LimeWire used to be my thing.
Yeah.
But you know what? We were just trying to get by. So, okay. So in July of that same year, Mac, Rostrum, and DatPiff all get sued by this producer, Lord Finesse, for $10 million. Lord Finesse claimed that Mac sampled one of his songs without his consent, aka copyright infringement. I feel like we've talked about copyright infringement a lot of times.
A million times.
But we need a primer because that's what we do for you here in Legally Judgy headquarters. Copyright is a type of intellectual property right that gives people or entities the exclusive legal right to own, use, distribute, and exploit original expressions of an idea, not the idea itself that they've created. And so copyright infringement is using someone else's original creative work without their permission. And in this case, that'd mean using someone else's song in your song without their consent, because songs are copyrightable. They are original expressions of work. And so we talked a lot about this on the Nicki Minaj episode. It actually was a very interesting one. You should go listen to it, because we really get deep into the what sampling means, interpolating records, all that stuff. Go check it out. So as we talked about on that Nicki episode, artists, a lot of times, as we all know, are going to remake or remix songs. I feel like it's pretty standard, and we want to get into a quick learning point here, because that's what we do for you all, on music clearance. In order to, in quotes, sample someone else's music, and by sample we mean take and use parts of an existing track, and then incorporate that into a new song, you need to, what we call in the legal field, clear it with the artist of that song. AKA, you need to ask permission, people, okay? And usually when you ask permission, that means you gotta pay them, right? Because nothing in life is free.
Nothing.
Sadly. You gotta ask, and
definitely
they're gonna
not
want
gas
some money.
These days.
Girl, don't get me started. I thought I got a deal because I saw like gas at $6.59.
That is not a fucking deal, bro.
But the other surrounding places were like $6.79.
Ugh.
Terrible. Terrible. Anyway, okay, wait. I digress. So here, Mac sampled Lord Finesse's song, Hip to Da Game. I hate saying duh. Honestly, it's not meant for me.
That felt very uncomfortable, so I would agree with you.
I made it more uncomfortable. I really did.
You definitely did. Why did you say that?
I just leaned into the
uncomfortable. Hip to Da Game. You have to just like let it roll off the tongue.
Because I think it's funnier if I say hip to the game.
Okay, just stop. Go ahead, though.
You're smiling, though.
Stop and go ahead at the same time.
Stop, but don't stop.
Oh, gross.
So, okay, about talking. Ew, gross. So Mac sampled Lord Finesse's song, Hip to the Game, in Mac's Kool-Aid and Frozen Pizza song. Very similar, we know. So Mac's song was allegedly downloaded over 500,000 times and streamed over 450,000 times. And Lord Finesse allegedly sent a cease and desist letter first. And by the way, cease and desist, we've talked about this a couple times. I'm thinking Khloe Kardashian episode. Go check that one out about a photo and who owns copyright in a photo. So interesting. So interesting that you should watch it or listen to it right after this one. But he sent a cease and desist basically saying, stop doing that or I'll sue. Allegedly, Rostrum Records refused to respond. So, of course, Lord Finesse sues, and he alleges copyright infringement, unfair competition, unjust enrichment, interference, and deceptive trade practices. We had a lot of claims.
Long list.
A lot of claims coming here. And Mac comes out with a couple defenses. Do you want to give us some defenses. Of these? Tell us what was he saying, girl?
So his first one, Mac said that he didn't profit off of the music because the song appeared in a free mixtape and was never distributed for profit, which is common for up-and-coming rappers who are kind of just trying to get like, their music out there and get noticed and picked up, etc. His second was that Lord Finesse was given credit on both the video that he made and the mixtape from the beginning. So it's like, here's my homage or like, you know, an acknowledgement. Yeah. This is where this came from. The third, Rostrum, the independent record label, claimed they consistently police digital retailers and other sites to make sure that no pirates were ever illegally selling the song. So again.
Okay. So what we're saying is they came up with things that they thought were defenses, but we know none of these actually are viable copyright.
They're not great. I didn't say they were defenses. Great, but here are their defenses.
I'm just saying, girl, we have to give our opinion because these are not our, like, if we were their lawyers, these would not be my opinion. I would not come up with this because a defense to copyright, this is what we've talked about before. When I see stuff on YouTube, they're like, I am not the copyright owner. And then it's like John Legend's yeah, music. Yeah. Like, that is not a defense, you know? Like, I am not the legal owner. That's not a defense. Again, you have to ask permission. If they say yes without payment, great. They probably won't.
I am sympathetic to the argument.
The morality is what you're saying.
I am sympathetic to Mac's argument that he didn't profit off of the music.
That's a good point. Well, yes. Damages because, will be the part.
Yes, but. Because like I didn't gain anything from this. Well, in theory, via that explicit song, I didn't gain anything.
Fame, notoriety.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I said explicitly. I didn't gain any monies from that specific song, even if there were other things stemming from it. So I'm sympathetic to that argument. The other ones, not so much. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But I should note that the most common defense for copyright infringement is fair use. This is an affirmative defense to copyright infringement that allows people to use copyrighted works without permission if certain conditions are met. And so most commonly this is for like commentary, criticism, parody, news, obviously.
First Amendment shit.
Like free speech. Yes, things that are protected.
Mm-hmm. And I want to add, interestingly here, because thank you for coming up with the defenses, but I thought this was really interesting that Mac
Queen.
You're all for the defenses, girl. Really good at being defensive.
Oh, wow. Okay. You dragged that.
Mac tweeted out that to Finesse, or about Finesse, that he based his Hip to the Game around a portion of this other artist's song, Oscar Peterson's 1971 jazz record, Dream of You. So basically he's saying, Finesse, that wasn't even your original song. You took it from somebody else. And he's claiming that he never actually cleared the sample from that original guy, Oscar. I just thought that was an interesting tidbit. I don't know if that's actually correct. I didn't desire to pursue it further.
Certainly not like a legally defensible claim, but
like you did it first. Yeah, is essentially yeah. what he's saying. Okay. And then Rostrum claimed that Finesse actually knew about the song and hadn't objected to it prior to filing the lawsuit, which again thought was interesting. Right?
The what things, do you think?
The things they're saying here. This doesn't just because he was cool with it maybe on Tuesday and then on Friday he was like, actually, this doesn't sit well with me. I'm going to sue you. Mm-hmm. That doesn't mean you can't bring a claim.
Yeah.
Just like saying I gave credit to him doesn't mean you didn't infringe on his copyright. And to your point about him not making profit, you're right in the sense that, you know, practically, what damages can you ask for? Because we always talk about that. Mm-hmm. Something can be illegal, but if you don't suffer actual damages, then going through the court may not make sense because what are you going to recover for? Right. You have to have suffered damages.
Well, he asked for $10 million, right?
$10 million.
So those were the damages that he thought he was
$10
million. Due.
He lost out, right? Mm-hmm. You have to prove why $10 million. Mm-hmm. I think people can forget that.
Yeah.
Anyways, go on.
Well, so in December 2012.
It's okay. It's better than the year of our law, 2026.
They end up basically settling out of court. They both said that they were happy it was over and remain amicable in the days following. Mm-hmm. Again, settlement, confidential mm-hmm. terms. We have no idea what, if anything, Mac paid, but we presume that he paid something.
Not $10 million, I say that.
Definitely not $10 million. I don't even think he had $10 million at that point in his career.
Not at all.
He probably didn't even have $1 million.
Look, if he didn't actually get clearance from Finesse, it was copyright infringement.
Yep.
But I think that they settled because Finesse, actually, when he looked at the receipts, how are you going to say you should get $10 million when you weren't even selling that track for profit? You can't even, it's not like you go on Spotify.
Also, and like this was song Lord Finesse this. Making $10 million? You know what I mean? Like,
no.
Probably not. Not anymore. Probably not. Who knows who he is?
Not in 90s. This is in the 90s. Real well, TBT.
So anyways, so after this, Matt continues to release mixtapes, and he started in a 6-episode reality series called, in quotes, Mac Miller and the Most Dope Family on MTV2, which followed the production of his second studio album and was even featured on Ariana Grande's lead single, The Way, on her debut album, Yours Truly, which ended up being Mac's highest peak on the Billboard charts at number 9.
Oh my God, you said it all. Congratulations.
Yeah. And so in 2013, he then releases his second studio album called Watching Movies with the Sound Off, featuring Schoolboy Q,
I love Schoolboy. Don't like his hats, but I love Schoolboy.
Oh, well, he's the bucket hat. I love the bucket hat for him.
It works for him.
It is his signature look for Schoolboy Q.
I put on a bucket hat. It doesn't work
for everybody.
No, I have a small head. Well, an absurdly disproportionately small head to my body. I'm not going to lie.
I don't think it's a small head thing. I just think that you have to have like a certain head.
Well,
you know,
okay, that sounds kind of wrong. Probably, girl. I don't know that life, but I also know I have a small head, and those hats don't really fit me well.
Well, I say that because at our anniversary party, we had bucket hats at the airbrush mm-hmm. stand, and mm-hmm. I really wanted one, and mm-hmm. I was like, this doesn't work for me.
The bucket hat.
It just didn't work for me. Just like, I tried it on, and I was like, it doesn't fit my style.
So we're going to let Schoolboy
Q have it. But then, like, my line sister, mm-hmm. bucket hats look fucking fantastic on her.
Great. So we're not Schoolboy Q. We're not
Schoolboy Q.
I just never found one that could fit my head. That's all I'm saying. Okay, go on.
This second studio album features Schoolboy Q, Tyler the Creator, Action Bronson, and J Electronica, Legend. And he ends up getting a key to the city of Pittsburgh from the mayor.
Woo woo. Nope. I gotta stop you. Okay. First of all,
pump the brakes?
Yes, please.
What was that?
I don't understand this whole concept of giving people keys to a city. Like, I've always thought that was really weird.
Aren't they like gold though? Real gold?
That's all you give a fuck about, huh, girl? You're like at your local pawn shop. You're like, bitch, this is the city. This is the city.
I'm definitely pawning it for a new Chanel bag.
But you literally are like five minutes before taking photos with the key with the mayor. You're like, yeah, bitch, and then you're like, cool, but I need to afford this bill at Nobu, so let me pawn this shit. That's you. Okay.
Excuse you, I can afford my bill at Nobu without pawning my little gold key. All right,
she's a bad bitch now. So my point being, I looked this up because I was like, what the fuck is with these keys? So I have a random ass fun fact because we are trying to insert some levity at times when appropriate. Did you know that this whole giving a key to the city is a symbolic meaning that that evokes medieval times where cities would be walled off in order to protect the city from outside forces? And so during the day, you'd have guards. And then at night, you would just fucking lock it because the guards can't possibly take on night shifts.
It's like Game of Thrones.
Yeah. So you go to sleep, you'd have a couple guards. Mm-hmm, so the mm-hmm. idea of getting someone a key to the city means we really trust you.
So you can come in.
Hope you don't fuck us up. Yeah. At night, coming in at 2 a.m. as a traitor.
This is so random.
And letting people invade.
I did not know that.
I made the font really small in our little
notes.
Who do
we think had a key in Game of Thrones?
Fucking Robb Stark.
We was a hottie.
That's all you care about. You care about gold keys and hotties. Pharrell, Robb Stark.
Jon Snow was also a hottie.
Robb Stark or Jon Snow?
Jon Snow, sadly, had a substance abuse issue.
Yeah, oh, geez. All right. Well, let's get on with it before this derails even more than it already has. So he continues to release music, and around 2014, he starts to address his drug-addicted lifestyle in his music. He ends up getting signed to Warner Brothers around this time, and it's worth noting that he ended up going with Warner's because he said, in quotes, they were the most independent thinking company that he met with. And then in 2015, the band Aquarium Dream actually ends up suing Mac, not them again, but Mac gets sued again.
Another lawsuit again.
Yeah, for $150,000, a little more reasonable here, because again, they allege that he sampled their song without their consent on Mac's 2014 mixtape Faces, which again, Mac had released for free. So he wasn't making a profit directly off of this mixtape.
He's giving away a lot of shit for free.
I mean, he was trying to make it.
Patreon was not around
He was trying to make it, man.
Patreon.
Patreon. Anyway, so Mac is back Mac is back with another copyright infringement
case.
What
a poet.
Mac sampled their song Yesterday Was So Nice Today. That's the name of Aquarian Dream's song, if anyone's interested. On Mac's song Therapy. I think they were a 1970s like funk music band. Uh-huh, I looked them up because I was like, I've never heard of this before.
No,
anyways,
neither.
His song was reportedly downloaded over 700,000 times. And again, reportedly, Mac and his team had reached out to get clearance, but never actually got it and decided to use the song anyways. Once again, go listen to our Nicki Minaj episode if that's of any interest to anybody, because the whole sampling of music is a somewhat interesting body of law, if I must say so myself. We couldn't find any report on what ended up happening, but it's probably very likely that, again, they settled out of court. And it was probably not that much money because, once again, Mac didn't sell for profit. Mm-hmm. Now, you have to sell for profit, or the person alleging copyright infringement had to be probably very much damaged mm-hmm. or hurt. And Aquarian Dream, like I said, I think is a 1970s funk disco band.
Nobody's.
Okay, well, they probably weren't selling a lot of records, and it's not like Mac's track took away from their track, which is ultimately what you're going to look at when you look at copyright infringement. If you want to know more, go check out the Nicki Minaj episode.
Love that for us. Mm-hmm. So all in, Mac released 5 studio albums, with his last coming out in 2018. His 5th studio album, Swimming, debuted at number 3 on Billboard 200 and later rises into the Billboard 100 after he sadly died. Mac was also kind of nominated for Best Rap Album at Grammys, posthumously, among many other kind of nominations around that point in time. And by the end of his career, all of his studio albums made it into the Billboard Top 5. And throughout his career, Mac spoke openly about his struggles with substance abuse and depression. And at one point in time, he ends up taking promethazine, which ends up like turning into a lean addiction. Lean mm-hmm. is like the street name, right? Because he mm-hmm. mixed promethazine with like a Sprite.
Future.
Or yes, future. Mm-hmm. Future is big on the lean. Mm-hmm. But it's on record that Mac quit in 2012 before he gets onto the MTV2 show that we mentioned before, but continues to use drugs daily. And at the very least, what we understand is it was like weed and a mix of pills mm-hmm. on top mm-hmm. of it. And in a February 2016 documentary, he said that he hated being sober, but he did have some successful periods of sobriety in his life. So I think he was hoping to continue that.
Right.
And so a lot of this kind of comes to a head when he dates Ariana Grande between August 2016 through May 2018. And so during this time, it was reported that Ariana helped Mac stay sober. And he kind of said that she was his motivation for him to stop using drugs. And when he was with her, he was said to be sober. And after about 2 years of dating in May 2018, they break up. And while the details surrounding their breakup aren't completely public, Ariana has alluded to Mac's drug use and his addiction issues kind of being one of the main reasons that they fell apart. Mm-hmm. And she said that the relationship was toxic, and after some people online criticized her for, in quotes, dumping him for another man, she spoke out and said that she wasn't a babysitter or a mother and that people needed to stop blaming her for a man's inability to keep his, in quotes, shit together.
Yeah, not great.
So sadly, days after his breakup from Ariana in May 2018, Mac is arrested for driving under the influence in a hit and run after he crashes into a utility pole and flees the scene with 2 other friends. And so police ultimately got his address after pulling his license plate number. And so Mac basically confesses as soon as the police arrive at his house, and he ends up being put into jail and arrested and, you know, kind of released on $15,000 bail, I think, at the end of it all. And in August 2018, he was charged with 2 counts of DUI. And so DUI stands for driving under the influence, which I'm sure most people know. It's a very common legal claim these days, sadly. And it essentially means that you were found driving with alcohol or other substances in your system. And the punishment varies based on the state, but typically this includes like probation, fines, suspension of your driver's license, classes for, I think, drinking and also drinking and driving, and mm-hmm. jail time. And as we unfortunately know, Mac ends up passing away just a month later, and the case was dropped just, you know, as a result of him not being able to kind of finish it out. Do you want to
take us
from there? Yeah. That was a heavy one.
Yeah, that was a lot. That was a lot. You did good, girl. So around this time, rumors actually started circulating that Pete Davidson, shout out to our Kanye West Kim Kardashian episode.
Gross.
That Pete, who we all know, was the next love affair that Ariana had. they started, Ariana and Pete dated pretty quickly after she broke up with Mac, but allegedly rumors started circulating that Pete had actually sent some intimate photos of Ariana to Mac, basically in an attempt to signal that Mac and Ariana weren't ever going to get back together. And reportedly, Ariana only found out about that after Mac passed away, and purportedly is one of the reasons why she ended her engagement with Pete, I should say, because I think, you know, her and Pete got engaged about a month after dating.
Was it that fast?
I think it was really, really fast, yeah.
Not to, like, shame her.
No, I mean, you know, Pete Davidson, that's all I'm going to say. He's got something.
We can't, enticing.
We can't deny that he's dated certain women, that has surprised some people.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so it's worth noting, though, that these rumors were never substantiated, and Ariana's brother actually, TMZ got a hold of him, and he said, no way, this isn't true. But, you know, people will deny. We don't know.
Can you imagine your sibling speaking to TMZ about you and your private life?
That'd be awkward, huh?
Like, that's not the vibe.
I'd just be
that,
like,
is not the vibe.
No, no, thank you, sir. No
I
comment.
Would say nothing. No comment. Yeah, no even comment. Even North fucking West knows North to say West. No comment.
She's
no
she's,
pictures, please.
She has Tracy on her side. She's good.
no, not Tracy.
So when Kanye, as we all know, when Kanye was feuding with Pete over Kim Kardashian, Kanye did retweet this rumor, which kind of gave it some more life, that essentially speculated, that started making people speculate all over again about Pete and the kind of guy he is and his intentions. Personally, I don't know if this is true. There's not enough out there for me to believe it's true, but that's just me. I feel like you...
But I just
you
feel...
Hate Pete you
I,
hate Pete
I don't like Pete Davidson. I do not enjoy him. And I also just feel that if he did it once to Kanye, would I be surprised if he also did it to Mac? No. I think Pete's kind of like a scam artist.
You do? You hate him, huh?
It's not hate. I just like don't... Something about him feels off.
Hmm.
I feel like I'm good at reading people's energies.
So you can read his energy through photographs.
I know. I think that I've always been good at deciphering who to trust and who not to trust.
So you think you can trust a celebrity based
on... He doesn't
on...
feel trustable.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying. Yeah,
it's not trustworthy. That's all I'm saying. It's trustable, people. You heard it here now. Are you trustable?
Good point. Fair enough. All right, so maybe I'm not good at reading things.
I don't think I trust
certainly not good at reading
you
words
right now. Okay, so as we've been alluding to, sadly, in September 2018, Mac is found unresponsive in his Studio City home after his personal assistant, who actually happened to be his sobriety coach, finds him basically laid out unresponsive. Mm-hmm. His assistant calls 911, and they perform CPR until the paramedics arrive. But he was so very sadly and unfortunately pronounced dead at the scene at just 26 years old. He was actually scheduled for a video shoot that day, and he was supposed to start touring for his swimming album in October. On November 5th, 2018, the LA coroner determines that he died of accidental drug overdose due to a mixture of fentanyl, cocaine, and alcohol. Fentanyl, especially, I mean, I feel like I've been hearing about fentanyl in general a lot more. Mm-hmm. And I was going to say, especially because of the show Euphoria, I feel like that just...
Oh, was that what they were doing?
Fentanyl was one of the... Was it not?
Now you're taking oxys.
What was the drug that the drug dealer made that one person take? It was Zendaya's character made her take it, remember?
Oh, I think she thought she was taking oxys, and then she probably like started to get mixed
up with
fentanyl.
He forced her to take fentanyl. It was like a little drop, and it was like had a crazy effect on her.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay, so fentanyl is laced into drugs more often than not, a lot of times, especially these days, because it's a powerful but relatively cheap synthetic. Lab-created drug that essentially can be laced into any drug mm-hmm. to give very potent effects mm-hmm. without, I guess, with very deadly consequences.
Yeah.
I'll say it that
that's
way.
That's right. That's right.
So in September 2019, three men are actually arrested in connection with Mac's death. And because we have a lot of moving parts here, we're going to talk about the three men individually, and then we're going to get into their claims. And by the way, do not beat yourself up if you don't remember the names and who they are, because it took me a quick minute to figure out who was who. So we're going to do our best to repeat who is who. So first, we're going to talk about the dealer slash seller, Cameron James Petit. Just 2 days before Mac's death, Cameron is the one that actually sold Mac 10 counterfeit oxy pills, which had fentanyl in them. And reportedly, Mac had asked for Percocets, a painkiller that actually has oxy in them. And he had also separately purchased cocaine and Xanax. Then we have guy number two, the runner, Ryan Rivas. Okay, so this is the guy that's going in between the dealer, Cameron, and the supplier, who we're about to talk about, supplier Stephen Walter. So Stephen is accused of giving the drugs to the runner, Ryan, who ended up giving them to Cameron, who is the one that ultimately sold those drugs to Mac. And note in court that Stephen actually claimed that he had directed Ryan, the runner, to deliver the pills to Cameron, thinking the drugs were actually for Cameron. He claimed he didn't even know that Cameron was meant to sell them.
Which makes no sense.
Doesn't make sense.
I'm sure you know who the dealer is in this equation as mm-hmm. the supplier. And so mm-hmm. if you're selling to your dealer, thinking your dealer is going to use, you probably have larger issues.
Fair enough. Fair enough, my friend. But that was Stephen's defense.
That's my street smarts.
That's your street smarts with a Z. And so that's important to note because, of course, Stephen is going to try to get away from the blame, right? He wants to say, which is what he did say, actually. He said, this was meant for Cameron. I thought Cameron's familiar with this substance. Cameron would know how much to ingest. I thought it was just going to lay with Cameron, is essentially what he said in court. Well, no one really buys it because Stephen ends up getting a plea deal of 17 years in prison. Now, we're going to come back to that, but we just want to set the stage for y'all. So these three men end up getting indicted on charges of conspiracy and distribution of drugs resulting in death. Conspiracy is an agreement between two or more people to commit an illegal act, including the intent to achieve that goal. All right, my friend. So do you want to give us the breakdown of, let's go with Ryan.
Let's dive in. How about him? Okay, so Ryan Rivas, as a reminder, he is the runner. So he is the person who goes between the supplier and the dealer. So in November 2021, Ryan Rivas pleads guilty to one count of distributing fentanyl. And so he said that he was the middleman and had no idea that the pills he gave to his fellow dealer, Cameron, were laced with fentanyl. And he only found out once he was arrested in 2019. None of this makes any sense.
Doesn't make sense.
That it makes no sense, right? Mm-mm. So he later admits in court that he knew the pills had fentanyl or another controlled substance, but just didn't disclose it before. So you're a fraud, my guy.
Yep.
So though he faced up to 12.5 years in jail, he asked for 5 years of custody. And he gives the following statement. This is not just a regular drug case. Somebody died and a family is never going to get their son back. My family would be wrecked if it was me. They'd never be all right, never truly get over it. I think about that all the time, and I know that whatever happens today, I'm the lucky one because my family is here, and I'm here, and I'll be with them again. I feel terrible. This is not who I am. My perspective has changed. My heart has changed. Okay.
Okay. Okay. Not by. Okay. So no. Remorseful is, but that's what we.
He's
that's
trying.
What he's trying to sell to the court, right?
Because trying to be remorseful. Yes.
And we should say this for our judges that you're going to enter into a plea deal at one point, and then you're going to later have a sentencing hearing, right? And then at the sentencing hearing, you're going to be able to give a statement.
Everybody gives statements.
Yeah, everybody gives statements.
The defendant and the...
Correct.
Presumably the family on behalf of
everyone
the
involved.
DA prosecutor.
Yes.
Yep.
So this is his statement. He's saying, I'm sorry. I realize the gravity of what I did, right? Because he has to make his plea. Okay, I see by your facial expressions, you're not buying it.
Don't
but
buy it.
This is his opportunity and the other defendants to say, I am so sorry. Mm-hmm. Please, I've learned my lesson. Don't give me X amount of years. Give me Y amount of years, right?
5 instead of 12 and a half.
Right. Well, yes, yes.
So kind of as an extension of this, his lawyers submit a sentencing memo that basically says he is a heroin and opioid addict who just delivered the drugs to support his own habit and that he was not connected to a larger conspiracy. And it's worth noting that they likely brought this up in his drug abuse specifically because this could be considered a mitigating factor by the court. And so a mitigating factor is basically a factor or a circumstance that lessens the severity or culpability of a criminal act, and that typically includes addictions that contribute to, like, criminal behaviors, past good deeds, mental capacity, age, etc. And then, so this is, like, basically all what they're trying to say. They're basically submitting all of this on top of his statement to say, like, we know that you want 12.5 years, but he's maybe deserving of less
mm-hmm.
because of his addictions.
Right.
And so in April 2022, Ryan eventually is sentenced to 10 years and 11 months in jail, which is less than the 12.5 years that the prosecutors originally asked for, plus 3 years of supervised release with drug testing. And during the trial, Mac's mom actually gave the following statement. My life went dark the moment that Malcolm left this world. Malcolm was my person more than a son. We had a bond and a kinship that was deep and special and irreplaceable. We spoke nearly every day about everything, his life, plans, music, dreams. And he said that she said at least that Mac never would have knowingly taken fentanyl and that he actually wanted to live and continue his career on. Mm-hmm. So I should say that on the opposite end of the mitigating circumstances or factors that Ryan's kind of attorney submitted on his behalf are aggravating circumstances. And these are basically the opposite of what we just discussed. So these are circumstances that lead to increased culpability in sentencing. And so here it's worth noting that Ryan, the runner again, had three guns in his possession when he was arrested, including one that was untraceable, plus boxes of ammunition, plus scales covered, like literal weighing scales,
right,
covered in heroin and meth, plus baggies, plus like blank prescription pads, which, you know, obviously right, nobody besides a doctor or I guess a drug pharmacist dealers should have.
Oh yeah, pharmacist.
No, drug dealers are not supposed to have blank prescription pads.
No, I mean that they would have. They shouldn't have them, but
yes,
they
I'm
have
just them. Saying that only doctors, yes, and pharmacists are supposed should to have them.
Okay, should have. Got it.
And then another aggravating circumstance is that Ryan had a text from 1 year after Mac died saying that he was still selling the pills. Mm-hmm. And in one text, he even admits that people had been, in quotes, dying left and right from fake blues, and fake blues are oxy pills, and that he knew law enforcement were going undercover basically to look for people, and they could put people in prison for life for selling the fake pills.
Right. So
a lot of things being said.
So basically, yes, his remorseful statement is undermined by the fact that we have these aggravating circumstances. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, what about the others? So we have Cameron James Petit. He was the one that sold Mac the counterfeit oxy pills. You know, that case is still pending. Okay, so I should note, there are a couple different reports going. Most reports say that the case is still pending and that his hearing is actually scheduled for this month in May. And he's looking at the possibility of life in jail if he's found guilty of all the charges that he was indicted upon. So that includes the conspiracy charges and the distribution charges. But it's worth noting that we did find that certain Rolling Stone sources say that a plea deal may have actually been reached in private. So those documents have been sealed. And, you know, eventually perhaps this will come to light. But as of right now, we cannot confirm or deny the status. Mm-hmm. And then we have Stephen Walter, who was the supplier. So in November 2021, as we mentioned very briefly, Stephen actually pled guilty as part of a plea deal and accepted a 17-year prison sentence for knowingly supplying the fentanyl-laced pills. And a reminder, a plea deal occurs when a defendant pleads guilty to the indicted charges or lesser charges in exchange for a reduced sentence and punishment. So here, the prosecutors dropped the more serious charges against him, including fentanyl distribution resulting in death, and allowed him to plead to a single new charge of just fentanyl distribution, so basically without the death part, which of course results in a lesser sentence. So last week on May 16th, the judge officially sentences him to 17 and a half years of the original 17 years plus 5 years of supervised release. And so we want to note here that the additional 6 months was actually added on because Stephen had continued to deal drugs since his November 2021 plea deal. So again, aggravating circumstance. The judge goes, you clearly haven't learned your lesson, in quotes. We're going to add more time to your prison sentence.
I was going to say, I feel like that might be the most fucked up, excuse my French, part of this all. When it comes to Stephen and the runner, is that they both knew that somebody had died from the drugs they were supplying, but they kept selling even after that. Mm-hmm. And I think obviously there was the acknowledgement by Ryan that like he knew they were like fentanyl laced and that people were getting thrown in jail for these things, but he was like continuing to do them. And so it's sad that like this is like a very real part of the society that we live in now. And there is this great series that your wife recommended to me called Soft White Underbelly on YouTube. And it's about, you know, the very real reality that is addictions in mm-hmm. like our current state of society.
Yeah. And this is exactly what we try to talk about to the best of our abilities, no matter what one-star Apple reviews say, is we want to talk about the morality of things because Things in life are very infrequently black and white. You can easily condemn all drug users and say something like, you know what, fentanyl laced or not, that's what he gets because he was doing drugs in the first place. However, I think that somebody that takes that position is actually very close-minded and doesn't realize the realities of just life. Because ultimately here, I think the important morality side of it is drugs will exist, unfortunately, whether they're legalized or not. And I think here, the sad part is that for a lot of folks, drug addiction is a freaking problem. I don't think anybody comes out of the womb like, you know what, for my life, I can't wait to be addicted to drugs. I think it's a systematic, unfortunate result. And this is going to get probably a little too political, but I do think that we just have too many socioeconomic disadvantages and inequalities that lead to addiction. And I think the unfortunate reality here is that drug user or not, when you think that you are going to be getting Percocet and you instead get fake pills laced with fentanyl, that was not your intention, you know? And that's the most heartbreaking aspect of all of this, is that if Mac had known, or so many people had known over time, that the pills that they thought that they were taking were laced with something else, maybe they wouldn't have taken those pills.
Well, I also think on the opposite side of things is that there is a systematic result that ends up, there's a systematic kind of process, whatever, that ends up in people selling drugs. And mm-hmm. so I think that, listen, yes, they sold these drugs to him that were obviously fentanyl laced, and so you should be punished to a certain extent, especially because you knew that there was fentanyl in these pills. But I'm also sympathetic to the fact that people end up selling drugs for many reasons, mm-hmm. and it's not because they want to be bad guys. Like, they're not, I don't think that most drug dealers are like, I want to, you know, sell fake drugs.
It's the ideal job for me.
What are these called? Fake blues out mm-hmm. in the system, you know, out mm-hmm. in the market. I think that they find themselves in situations where they're like, I have to provide for my family. Mm-hmm. I don't have any other choice. I haven't finished school. I can't find a job, whatever the case is. And so they feel like they are backed up against the wall, and this is like their last kind of option.
Yeah.
And so I'm also sympathetic to the fact that, like, this is not, I'm sure that's not their ideal kind of job to be in. And so, yes, right. like, I do think that, and listen, I think that's why the court has these things called mitigating circumstances, because they're like, let's take into account how you got here,
right,
and not just, you know, kind of brashly make one decision that, like, you're a drug dealer, so you get to go to jail for 10 years.
Right.
Maybe you have things that have happened to you, like mental capacity, et cetera, that should factor into how long you spend in jail.
Right, and I guess in Steven's case, right, he was, when he entered into his plea deal originally in November 2021, he was given 17 years. Fast forward, what, just 6 months later in May 2022, he's given 6 additional months because they find out he's still dealing. Well, do we think that somebody who was dealing the way that he was dealing is just going to come up with a new career over the course of 6 months, right? And he's just going to change his life like that? I wonder, I don't know Steven personally. There's not much information about mm-hmm. him online, mm-hmm. but maybe he probably tried to avoid this life before. And I don't know if this moment, as remorseful as they can be, and I think that's the thing to remember, is somebody looks at a remorseful statement and goes, stupid, because we found out you were still dealing. I think both things can exist. You can be remorseful, mm-hmm. but you could also still be an addict.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the compassion that people need
like
to
Ryan guy.
Remember. Yeah. Yes, yes, exactly. Ryan, who, and or he may not be. We don't know. And that's ultimately the thing that I think that we try to remember, is that I think, and this came up a lot with our Johnny and Amber episode, and I think it's meaningful to address, because we did get a lot of, no, not a lot. There was a small minority that gave us a lot of heat because they felt we weren't pro-Johnny enough and that we were not hard enough on Amber. But the truth is, none of us know what actually was going on in any of these people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody we're talking about, we mm-hmm. don't know what was happening. So our job, we feel, here at Legally Judgy HQ, is to do our best to present as many sides as we can possibly.
Yep.
So all we can say is, I don't think anybody wakes up thinking, you know what, today would be a great day to become an addict. And then
or
every day,
a drug dealer.
Or a drug dealer. and say that, you know what, this is the best ideal life for me.
I also understand Mac Miller's mom's side of things, right?
There we go.
Like, if I were a parent, or even if I weren't a parent, if something happened to my husband, God forbid, or even you or my siblings.
Even you. That's sweet. Thank you.
Okay. I said, or even my siblings. So I just, you know.
No, it's fine.
Everybody ranks after my husband.
Even you is really sweet. I'm just saying,
my
homage.
Husband comes first for me. Okay. I said it to say, though, that, like, I would imagine that if it were somebody that I loved who were in Mac Miller's position, I would also feel like, fuck you. You can be buried under the jail. So, like, I get that there's...
Under the jail.
Under the jail. Isn't that what they say that? Bury you under the jail?
I don't know. I don't watch those
things. Throw you under the jail? I don't
remember. Girl, I'm still watching Survivor.
There's a phrase for this.
That doesn't come up on Survivor.
I'll Google it and come back to you later. All I'm saying is that I think that what we understand here at LJ is all of the nuance.
Right. We try to.
We try to, like, play devil's advocate and, like, hit all the perspectives.
Right.
And so while that's not always popular, we will do it.
And I think, and like you said, the mother, Mac's case, right, that side of it is, it's really unfortunate that Mac, to our knowledge, wasn't looking for fentanyl-laced pills. And yet he ended up with fentanyl-laced pills.
Yeah.
And who knows what these guys knew or didn't know. Based on some text messages, it seems like they knew, but they're also trying to survive. So that is part of the morality. And if anybody feels any differently or wants to express how they feel, hit us up, legallyjudgy@gmail.com. Hit us up in the DMs on Instagram, on Twitter. We are available for discussions. But let's move on. Okay, so in December 2021, news drops that a biography about Mac is going to be coming out. It's going to be called, and I think it's been released, Most Dope, The Extraordinary Life of Mac Miller. Mm-hmm. And it's written by music journalist Paul Cantor. Mm-hmm. And the title's named after Mac's hometown crew. Sweet. He interviews his close friends, managers, critics, and fans to put together a picture of Mac's life, including his heavy drug use, his dating troubles, and everything to do with his life to the best of his abilities. However, Mac's mom actually posted in 2021 saying that the biography was unauthorized and that the journalist was made aware very early on that his family and friends were uncomfortable with the book being written. This book, it's worth noting, was actually supposed to be released on the day before Mac's 30th birthday, January 18th this year. So, unsurprisingly, that makes the family even more upset because they feel this is pretty exploitive. I personally wouldn't disagree. So, it was in fact released then, and his family says, this, in quotes, "This book is not authorized or endorsed by Malcolm's family and has been written by a writer with whom Malcolm did not have a relationship. We urge those that wish to support Malcolm to abstain from purchasing this new book." And then the family actually...
But on the other hand...
Yep, go on, girl.
They actually authorized a separate book called The Book of Mac, Remembering Mac Miller, by the music journalist Donna Claire Chessman. And this one will go through, like, it's not going to be as much of a life perspective as the other one, but it's going to go through his albums with commentary from his friends and collaborators. And I feel that we should just dive into a little combo
one
here
last time.
Very quickly about, like, life rights.
We have a lot of different legal primers here. Yep, let's do it.
We've got a lot. Okay, so the first book, while we understand this is the first book being called The Most Dope One,
yeah,
The Extraordinary Life of Mac Miller, we understand that the family did not support it, right?
Mm-hmm.
But factually speaking, if they're using things that are public record, mm-hmm. but then also getting interviews from people who know Mac Miller, while the family may not support it, it's not illegal per se.
Yeah, it's a good point. And it's worth noting that certain rights, you have, every human being has personal rights, right? And certain rights are going to die with the person. And let's be real, mm-hmm. these really only matter if you're famous, a celebrity in a lot of cases, right? Because, for example, morbid, but if I die and a book is written about me.
Sad, but okay.
At best, maybe a couple people are going to buy that book. People just don't know who I am. Maybe
I'll buy
a couple
copy.
Judges. Hopefully the patrons are going to buy it. One last homage to you. Thank you. But this is really what we're trying to protect, right? So, and by we, I mean the legal community. I can't believe I lumped myself in with them, but here we are. So certain rights die with a person, meaning lawsuits can't be brought on their behalf after death. So we're specifically talking about defamation and privacy. Mm-hmm. So defamation, false stuff that ruins your reputation. Well, once you pass away, no one really, you know, you're not alive anymore. So your reputation.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Well, the point is, when you're dead, your reputation, legally speaking, means less, right? Yeah. And the same goes with privacy. You're dead. So your privacy kind of become, no, not kind of, becomes null and void under the law. You're dead. So it doesn't really affect you anymore. Of course, that it can affect your relatives, close friends, but under the law, that's just how it goes. I'm sorry. And then in certain states, including California, certain rights, including publicity, are going to survive a person's death. Mm-hmm. Publicity rights, as a reminder, a right to profit from or control the commercial use, so basically make money off of someone's name, voice, signature, photograph, likeness, anything to do with you.
But to clarify, right, like they're not using any of those things with respect to the book.
Yes, and that's what we're going to talk. So
okay, sorry.
So, no, that's a good point.
Did I get too excited?
It's a good point.
Okay, sorry.
Girl, you're too excited. Go ahead. I appreciate it. I appreciate it. I'm just kind of trying to give this primer. So in California specifically, postmortem publicity rights survive for 70 years after death. New York, which is like the second most popular one, I will say, in terms of like entertainment and where people tend to live, because that's what really is going to matter.
I love New York.
Yeah, I know. It's 40 years. But to my good friend's point, what you just said is you have an unauthorized biography, unauthorized in quotes, right? Because it's really his specific family, his mom, let's just say his mom as a representation of his family. But this book interviewed friends and, you know, other people. I don't know if it's family actually, but friends. The point here is that actually unauthorized biographies are oftentimes protected by First Amendment free speech rights because people want to be... We care a lot about being able to tell stories. So as long as, to your point, you are factually correct, you're probably not going to get into trouble. And even in these states where there are publicity rights that survive someone's death, there are very specific actions you need to take in order to recover on a publicity claim. So specifically in California, the estate, so in this case, Mac Miller's estate, would have to file to be in control of his publicity rights. And if this book, for example, were to come out before that, even if it violated a publicity right, wouldn't be able to recover. Very specific. Because like you said, people have a right to talk about people. And it's like, it reminds me of actually our Selena episode where we had her dad very protective of telling Selena's story.
Yep.
Right?
About, but like anything that her name was attached to, quite frankly. Because remember the car fresheners?
Not good. Yeah.
He sued them. Sorry.
The car wash who wanted to sell... Yes, Selena.
Air fresheners.
Air fresheners. Selena's face. And Abe Quintanilla sued them and said, nuh-uh, you can't do that. But then you had
I guess that's the photograph and likeness part, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas I think that this autobiography, or not autobiography, but this biography by, what was the guy's name? Paul Kantor. He was just reporting on facts. He was reporting on things that were publicly accessible information. He was... literally given interviews of people in Mac's circle.
Right.
And so this doesn't seem to run afoul of any of the laws that we've talked about.
Right. Exactly. Facts are not copyright protectable. Free speech, First Amendment right trumps that.
Yep.
Because we care about being able to tell stories. So screw you, copyright infringement.
Yeah.
Screw you, publicity rights.
What an eloquent ending. Well, okay. So the summary is that Mac Miller was a very, very up-and-coming rapper. Sadly, he passed away after he overdosed. All three of the men who were at least directly responsible for his death, including the drug dealer, the runner, and the supplier, have been charged, and they have some prison sentences ahead of them. And so it's a sad story.
It is very sad.
Because he was young. He was young, and 26. He was very talented. So
exactly. That's all we can say.
Do you have any advice? Any unsolicited advice here?
I don't know. This is just too sad. Yeah. No, because I'm not gonna come out and say don't have a drug addiction. That's ridiculous.
That's right.
No. Yeah. Not at all. Just be careful.
Yeah.
I guess is all we can say.
That's right.
Do the best you can every single day. Yep. That's all we can say.
Yep.
And
if you don't,
try again tomorrow. Okay. Q&A.
So to shift a little bit.
Yeah, we have a Q&A. Couple questions. Okay, I like this one. How to make the most of a summer internship as a rising 2L.
Yeah.
Okay, so for our non-law school, non-lawyer clientele, what this is saying is I just completed my first year in law school. Law school is 3 years. And I want to make the most of my internship over the summer. Mm-hmm. How do I do that? Is what they want to, is that what they're asking?
So my internship specifically was with a district court judge in Philadelphia. Ooh. And so I did lots of research and memos for a district court judge. And so I would recommend, based on my experience, is just like take all the assignments that you can, at least the ones that you're interested in, mm-hmm. and see like what stands out to you. I don't know what might be of interest to you down the line, and like take those. And I think as a secondary to as a secondary message to that, I spent that summer reaching out to people from my law school who were in law firms that I wanted to be at, just to understand like what their experience was.
Mm. I think that's good. First summer internship was at a nonprofit where I worked in downtown LA, helping homeless veterans get their benefits. Actually, it was very sad, but fulfilling, but mostly sad. And I would say that my recommendation is, one, to enjoy the experience to the best of your abilities, and to figure out, not only to enjoy it while you're there, but to figure out if you think that's for you. Because you actually have a very limited time as a law school student. You have 2 summers, right, in between your 3 years of law school to try to figure out what exactly you want to do when you graduate. I did take an externship during my 3rd year of law school, which made school a little bit harder because I was working part-time. But I would say, exactly like Nicole said, just try to take advantage, talk to as many people as you can. Mm-hmm. I am a huge proponent of meaningfully networking to the best of your abilities.
Yeah.
So you want to create meaningful relationships with the people around you, because you just never know who's going to be where later mm-hmm. in your career. So no matter where you end up, make sure you are talking to people, going to lunches, having drinks, and making the best of it.
Perfect answer. I have mm-hmm. a question for you.
Okay.
One of our judges just graduated from nursing school and is about to start working in the hospital. Do you have any legal advice for her?
Don't kill or anybody.
Him? Oh, okay.
I don't know. I've never worked in a hospital. Legal advice. That's so specific as a nursing. Do you think they're going to hurt somebody? Or?
Well, okay, dark. I think from my limited knowledge of the medical field, I don't think there is the level of liability for a nurse as there is for like an anesthesiologist per se. Oh. And so while I still think that you should exercise your skills to the best of your abilities.
There we go. Buzzword. Today.
I think that you have probably a lesser concern than like some of the doctors do. And not yes. because you're not as experienced. I just think that like the insurance policies typically rest with the doctors and not with the nurses.
Yeah. I mean, we're talking about MedMal, right? Medical malpractice. So yes. I think that if you were wholly negligent and you were entrusted with caring for a patient and you just left and went on a happy hour Taco Tuesday outing, maybe you'd run into some trouble. But short of that, yeah, you shouldn't be staffed on things you're not supposed to be capable of at the outset, right? And if so, to Nicole's point, that should fall under somebody else. I felt the same way, for what it's worth. Because I want to make it akin to my experience as a baby lawyer, as a first-year lawyer. If someone said, you know what, Alexa, I'm going to go on vacation. You handle this $100 million closing. I'm a first-year. I don't know much. So you know what? I'm going to do my best. But if it doesn't go well, it's not on me. Yeah, it's on the higher not
up.
On me, bro.
It's on the higher
I did
up.
I did the best I could. So yeah, I'm going to snitch if that goes south. That's what I would say. But otherwise, congrats on graduating from nursing school.
That's exciting.
That's fucking legit.
That's amazing.
Good for you. What's it like to handle blood? Whoever wow. asks that.
As you like lose color.
Yeah, I'm like, that seems terrible, but good for you. Okay. Should we move into our patron-only section?
Yeah.
All right. So, everybody, go sign up for our Patreon. I know that's shocking to hear that we have one. All right. Thank you. All right, everybody. Well, there we go. We started off the Patreon with some terrifying stuff, but we ended up with some nice self-care hopes, I'll say. We're gonna strive for that. So remember, go tell your friends, family, everybody about us. go drop us a 5-star Apple rating and review, because Lord knows we need it. We're at a 4.7, people. Let's get us to a 4.8. Let's get us to a 4.8. I feel like we could do it. I feel 4.8. All right?
Okay.
All right. Thanks for tuning in to today's episode of Legally Judgy. We hope you enjoyed listening to us talk as much as we love the sound of our own voices.
If you did, please subscribe, rate, and leave us a review. Also, join us.
Bye.